This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Each year, New York City braces itself for the annual Costume Institute benefit, better known as the Met Gala at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Only the elite get an invitation. This year's guest list included the likes of Cardi B and Mitt Romney and was co-chaired by Rihanna, Donatella Versace, Amal Clooney, and the iconic Anna Wintour. Officially, it is an annual fundraiser for the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute in New York City, and every year there's a theme, and celebrities spend a whole lot of money to dress the part. Past themes have included tributes to Chanel, the punk movement, and fashion in the age of technology. This year's theme was Heavenly Bodies, Fashion, and the Catholic Imagination. David Morgan attended some of the festivities this year, and he wrote an essay for the exhibit. He's the chair of the Department of Religious Studies at Duke University. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So you were part of all of this fun. What did you attend at this gala?
I was there for the press preview that same day as the Met Gala, which was in the evening. I sadly was not invited.
Oh, yeah. I
didn't have the budget for that.
I would give you my invitation. I'm sorry I didn't know. Okay, so you're there for this. So people all gussied up at this press event. They must have been, right?
Well, it was a remarkable event, full of luminaries, New York's elite, people who fund the Met, funded the exhibition, the great icons of the fashion world, some of whom you mentioned, Donatella Versace and Anna Wintour and others, as well as the Cardinal.
The Cardinal's there, Cardinal Dolan. We're going to talk about him in just a minute. But and performers and actresses and singers who, you know, trade in this stuff. Mm-hmm. They must have been eye-popping just to see this.
Oh, it was a media fest. There were more cameras than I could possibly count. It was a huge media event promote the exhibition and to prepare the stage for the Met Gala that evening.
All right. And so, but here it is. Now the theme is actually the Catholic Church, which is not, you know, what you would expect in these sort of high art venues. I mean, you know, for a long time, there's been a really kind of arm's length distance between the two. Were you surprised that this was the theme?
I was really quite surprised. That was one of the biggest jaw-dropping events of the day for me. To see the Cardinal there, the Archbishop of New York, discussing Jesus, discussing the theology of beauty amidst the what one would normally think of as completely secular world of high fashion.
Yeah, this is hedonism writ large. Though the church does participate in at least the glamour of it all and has Indeed. For a while. Tell us a little bit about, let's go back to the history, and then I want to come back to the gala because, as you say, Cardinal Timothy Dolan was there and he spoke, and I want to hear what he had to say. But talk about this because, you know, you will recall, as the head of the Religious Studies Department at Duke, you will know that the founder of Christianity, as far as we know, wore sandals and a tunic. Mm-hmm. So the idea that there would be this elaborate garb and costumery and dramaturgy, really, that is related to the church could come as a surprise to some. Mm-hmm. How did it get to be that way?
Well, there were clearly some major transformations on the road, the historical road of Christianity. And one of those, which was quite critical, was the relationship between the church and the Roman Empire. It started out in a rather bad way for Jesus, but eventually the church became very much the heart of the Roman Empire by the 4th century. And the church was transformed by that. The church, of course, transformed the empire in significant ways, but was not immune to some deep structural changes. And one of those was its sense of authority and office and how this is conveyed through costume, through spectacle. And we still see that. It's a rich and powerful and fundamental part of the legacy of Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, with the church, as some would say, was converted to Roman imperialism in the 4th century. Some would say it's the converse. But in any case, it had to play the part because now it has power. It owns
Indeed.
Property. It has authority. In fact, even secular authority. They're playing the role of judge as well as...
Yeah. Bishops were civic magistrates as well as church officers.
So they had to look the part, and that's when the costume stuff, you know, sort of builds in, and it becomes quite elaborate. Is there a history of this, a kind of genealogy, or was it sort of? Are we looking back at that snapshot of when they finally had to look like an imperial authority? Did it get more elaborate over time, or was that the highlight?
Well, it certainly became more elaborate, but it was always a matter of recognizing the social elite and investing in them the both ecclesiastical and civil power. And this continues throughout the Middle Ages and into the Renaissance when the sons of the elite are named to ecclesiastical office, become abbots, become bishops, prelates, and part of the Roman Curia, the papal court. And that part never changed.
And this leads to some of the greatest criticism, certainly in contemporary times, that the church is looking the part and really playing the role of consumer and an elite authority rather than being of the people and a spiritual guide. This has been the critique.
It's a constant critique, yeah, from within the church as well as from without.
So here they are now being glorified at the Met for precisely this, and Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York, the Archbishop of New York, has to make a talk. So what does he do? He's got to bring this kind of these things together, right?
Yeah, well, it was an interesting conjunction of two different worlds. But he made the point, which was an interesting point to make, that they are not entirely distinct from one another in terms of the critical role of beauty. And he developed quickly, in a talk of a few minutes, a kind of rudimentary theology of beauty, that beauty is not a purely secular thing, that it's part of God's vision for the universe, it's part of God's creative power, and it's part of what God bestows to nature, to the church, to humanity.
So this is simply a reflection of the
indeed, you know. Yeah, it's a fine articulation of a theological point, which he could have, he didn't, drawn on ancient theology and philosophical traditions, most particularly perhaps Neoplatonism, to make his point.
Yeah, but interestingly enough, and we're going to be let's follow this tangent for a little bit, and then we'll get back to the glam. But this is, you talk about Neoplatonism. This really is the Westernization and a kind of strain of Western thought about theology. It certainly would not have dovetailed so well with that ancient Palestinian thought that we think.
Right.
Was
yeah, quite thing. A different tradition of thought, and no doubt about it. And that was the philosophical framework into which Western Christianity and the East fit and took fundamental theological shape in the centuries, two, three, four centuries after Jesus died.
So now we get to the Met, and here we are, the Catholic imagination being celebrated by the Met as part of its the Met Gala, a big, big deal. The tickets are like $30,000. That's if you get the invitation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to buy the hat to go. Well, tell me, can you describe? I mean, you may not be. I don't think you've ever written for Vogue, but what did you see? What are people wearing there?
Well, I didn't get to go to the gala, but people were prepping for it at the press preview, and this kind of fascination with religious vestments was striking. It was quite a new thing for me. I was aware that some of these top drawer designers had worked with Catholic influences, but I had no idea of the extent of it.
Well, and to talk more about that, because many of the designers were raised Catholic, and this does influence their design today, right?
And are presumably lapsed now in many cases, but they genuinely drew profound artistic inspiration from the history of Catholic vestments.
Now, would anyone have seen this? So let's say that you're sort of deeply spiritual or deeply rooted in your religion as a Catholic. Would you have been? Could people have been offended by the way?
I think if you're talking about the
iconography,
if you talk about the exhibition itself, I would think not. That's my guess. If you talk about the Met Gala, that's another question. The exhibition itself is designed on the theme of pilgrimage. So one moves through a very large installation of objects throughout extensive parts of the Met, which is itself a kind of temple of art. The exhibits are dramatically lit. They're presented in a very sober way, a very respectful way. There's lots of room to gather around the objects, to see them within the context of Catholic liturgical traditions. I think it's I would be surprised if people were offended.
That there at the gala, again, people wearing costumes that in one way or another reflected Catholic iconography. Rihanna was there with one of those really cool papal hats. I always get corrected. I thought that was a mitre.
And the mitre is the bishop's hat.
Okay.
The tiara is the papal crown.
All right. So, and she, it turns out, had the bishop's hat, the mitre, and she gets crazy. So what's interesting about this is that the Archbishop of Cardinal Timothy Dolan was on Sirius XM the next day joking about what she was wearing.
Rihanna was wearing a mitre last night.
Yes. In fact, the news said she was wearing a tiara, which, no, she was wearing a Vienna, and she gave it back to me this morning.
Oh, really? That's yours? It nicely matched her dress. It looked great.
I was teasing my auxiliaries.
Yeah, bishops.
Who were teasing me.
Yeah.
About Rihanna, and I said, hey, you guys should not complain because she's volunteered to do some confirmation. So
she looked like she was.
She was very gracious. Everybody was. I couldn't believe it.
There you go. So apparently everybody in good humor takes a bishop to do the confirmation. In case you didn't know, that was the Archbishop Timothy Dolan on Sirius XM's Catholic Channel talking about Rihanna wearing Catholic-inspired headdress at the Met Gala. And my guest today, David Morgan, is the chair of the Department of Religious Studies at Duke. He was invited to write an essay. How did you get invited to do that?
Andrew Bolton, the curator, chief curator of the Fashion Institute, had invited me, got in touch. He knew my work on the history of religious art and Catholicism and Protestantism and invited me to participate. And I was quite struck by this relationship. I've always been intrigued by the relationship between art and religion. They have a complex and important historical relationship. And this seemed like a wonderful opportunity to continue thinking about this connection.
Well, talk more about that, because I think it's fascinating. I mean, we might sort of on the surface, you say, how is the Catholic Church invited and why was that the theme for the fashion? But this is precisely it. I mean, religions were always meant to address that ineffable need, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that can't be possibly expressed. And it was precisely the smells and bells and bigger than life kinds of exhibitions that were meant to bring you into this inner space, right?
I think it's really an important point. For me, the materiality of religion is the point. Religion can easily be boxed as something intellectual, theological. Clearly, that's part of any religion, but it's only part. And the other part is the body, the bodies of worshipers, the bodies of gods, of saints, the practices that attend to the body, pilgrimage and veneration and relics. And in Christianity, the central ritual of Holy Communion, which is to draw into the Godhead through the consumption, as the Catholics believe, of the body and blood of Jesus. You can't really get much more material.
Right.
So architecture becomes critical, space becomes critical, and clothing is critical. And I think in the study of materiality, clothing often gets sort of shunted to the side. But in fact, it's a very material thing. Clothing transforms the body. It becomes a kind of second skin. And it has very powerful roles to play in signaling social status and station and in the construction of spectacle and ritual.
Yeah, and it has been the criticism of the church, particularly the Catholic Church, that it has this kind of otherly hierarchical thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as you say, it was precisely designed to do that. I want to put you in mind of something that, and if they're doing it right, I, even the priest, don't have a right to claim, mm-hmm. don't have a claim to. Let me put you in mind of something much bigger than both of us.
Yeah.
Which is what, and where the connection might be, which is what popular culture does for us today. And to the degree that maybe formal religion is losing popularity and has been replaced by mm-hmm. popular culture, the iconography hasn't changed. It still smells and bells and fancy hats, right?
Yes, indeed. And artists and musicians and all kinds of people are drawn to that and continue. The life of religion continues in a powerful way in cartoons and film and fine art and popular music.
And you argue that, in fact, it's not just that these things happen to be very similar or that they perform separate roles in their own arenas, but in many ways, artists and performers who might otherwise seem secular are actually urging toward this, are actually leaning into this.
Yeah, I think so, because images and objects and spaces have a power to evoke, to imagine, to draw people in at a kind of nonverbal embodied level. And that doesn't abate. That's still with us. Even though the ideas may be feeble or frail or half forgotten, the body's still there working and doing a lot of powerful cultural work.
And what's fascinating about thinking about this relationship and how close it is, how much closer than we might think, it would also explain how religion and politics are playing such a great part. Because, again, it's playing to that irrational, and this is not to denigrate the irrational. In fact, it is a much larger part of the human experience than the rational. That identity gets played out through all of these things.
Indeed.
And to not understand the power of that is to perhaps it puts you at a disadvantage.
Yeah. No, the life of feeling, of felt relationships is critical to, as you say, the politics of identity. The connections we make with one another are often more deeply felt than they are rationally articulated.
Great stuff. Hope you had fun. And, you know, next year, I will give you – I didn't even know. I just threw the darn thing out but I'll give you my invitation.
Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. David Morgan, chair of the Department of Religious Studies at Duke University, wrote an essay for the Met exhibit, Heavenly Bodies, Fashion and the Catholic Imagination. The exhibit runs at the Met in New York until October 8th, so you got plenty of time. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us tomorrow when we do this again.